back. I hope, however, the time was spent that it was of benefit and in some form or another nurturing. I'm gonna ease us into the sit. You won't hear my dogs barking in the background, but there are a lot of birds. So if you're wondering what that sound is, it's the birds. So I invite you to close your eyes. Allow your body to come into a posture that allows you to feel upright and alert in this, maybe sitting or maybe lying down. It's just more the energetics of settling into this practice, which is deeply ennobling. This is a path of freedom. And being able to feel the energetics of embarking together in this practice that is liberatory moment by moment. We can find ways of unhooking. And as we will sit together for the next 30 minutes or so, I want to invite us to keep our attention in the body. We'll play in the realm of the first foundation of mindfulness, mindfulness of the body. And for many of us as women, taking refuge in the body is not always easy for any number of experiences that we've had, traumatic or otherwise, that have sort of pushed us out of the body, or that line from James Joyce, the quote, Mr. Smith lived a short distance from his body, and that we can slip into that so easily. And this invitation here now to be like, well, what? How is it if we allow ourselves to rest in the body? And again, as women and men too, it's not always easy to have a sense of friendliness towards the body, a sense of it should look different, or it should be a different size or shape or tone, or a different sense of health, or all the myriad of ways we can find fault with our body. So to turn towards resting in the body is not an easy ask. And yet I'm somewhat asking it. Can we, for this time, our time together, again, leaning into the strength of the Sangha, can we cultivate the sense of friendliness towards our body, our first home, our only home, our last home? Right, it's this body of ours that stays with us in this lifetime. So as we turn our attention towards the body, taking our seats in this global Sangha of ours as daughters of the Buddha, sitting in a circle I like to think that women have always done. And can we sit with a sense of, okay, can I be okay with this body of mine, resting the attention in this body of mine? Again, I'm very aware of the range of experiences of being embodied, physical pains to illness. Not always easy. So is there a place in the body that feels okay enough to rest? To pay attention to the sensations. It could be the sensations of a breath, an in-breath, an out-breath. Being able to rest the attention on the subtleties of an in-breath and an out-breath. And I love the invitation of a half-breath. We set ourselves up for success. Can I rest the attention on an in-breath and then the exhale? For some of us, the breath is not a neutral experience. It can come with a charge, in which case let it go. And then can we rest the attention on, say, the sensations of a hand on the leg, or the hands holding each other, the pressure, the temperature, the boniness of the hand on hand, the boniness of the hand on the leg. Invariably, the mind will wander. Creative thoughts, monotonous thoughts, repetitive thoughts. judging, planning, comparing. Okay. And then coming back. Wait, rest here. Can we rest on the movement of the breath? Can we rest in feeling the sensation of the hand on the legs, the hands on each other, like as refuge? Here, rest here. And notice how it is. How is it in this moment? Remembering, please, there's no such thing as a bad sit. We come, we take our seat, and we see how it is. We also cultivate our capacity to meet ourselves as gently as possible in this moment and in the next moment. As Christina Feldman says, the size of the task is never greater than the moment at hand. So allowing our attention just to be here, oh, this moment, this breath. Yeah. And allowing there to be the space of however the sit unfolds. It's an amazing opportunity we have to sit together. So nice to practice together. Thank you, Carlita, for ringing the bell. Before I start, I wanted to mention last week there was a question about mindfulness and teachings on mindfulness and pain management. And I got an email from Sounds True about an offering, mindfulness for pain, offered by Bidimaya Birch, OBE, which I don't know what that stands for, on November 5th. But if you were to Google Sounds True, mindfulness of pain, undoubtedly this will pop up. And it's just a class that's live on November 5th. And just wanting to offer that to whomever it might be a benefit. And thank you for putting that in, Carlita. Today, I want to play around in the territories of perspective and refuge. That may not seem like they go together, but in my mind, really wanting to look at where do we find refuge, and certainly the Triple Jewels, the teachings of taking refuge in Buddha, Dharma, Sangha, absolutely. And also wanting to push on that of how does that translate into the actuality of our lives, that taking refuge in the Buddha, the man, the historical man, Siddhartha, he woke up. And his saying, if I can do it, I wouldn't teach it if it weren't true. I wouldn't teach if it weren't available to you. And this capacity that by knowing this man at time, 2,600 years ago, he did it. So for us to take refuge in the idea of it is possible as a human to work with the mind, even again, a moment-to-moment basis to find freedom from the hindrances and the conditioning of the mind and the various and myriad of traumas and ways the mind and body contract and the hindrances, right? And through his teachings, he's saying that we can clear all that away and find a place of awareness that is trustworthy. So that's taking refuge in the Buddha. The Dharma is that which is trustworthy, right? The Dharma being the truth, the teachings, this is the way, this is the path. And as each week, kind of exploring different takes on the teachings, those of you who do studies otherwise and in other capacities on what these teachings are, how do we ingest is not really the most poetic word, but in a way there's an actuality. How do we make them real? How do we integrate them in our day-to-day life? And that's certainly a passion of mine, that the retreat practice is beautiful and so important, not always available to us. And really so much of that time on the cushion or walking is practice for the day-to-day. How do we interact with our family, our loved ones, those that we are living with when we're living alone? How do we manage our this life? And that these teachings point to, here, check this out. Try it this way. It's refuge in the Sangha. You know, a deep bow to all of you for coming. The 20 odd years of this particular Sangha that has happened, the phenomenal offerings of Spirit Rock, the myriad of Sangha availability there. And now that we can all be online, just everywhere, people that can come across the globe, and that we, wherever we are, we have access to so many teachings. And there are teachings and there are Sangha, right? And how can we, in these times of, for many of us, our communities got so fractured during the pandemic, and we've recovered to some degree or another, but how do we really allow ourselves to drop in to a Sangha and feel its importance? And the Buddha was really clear, like, you can't do this without Sangha. It's really hard to do it on our own, that we need to be able to lean in to each other, which is one of the reasons I love this Sangha so much. And I'm so grateful that we can do this. Those are the offerings of the teachings, right? The Triple Jewels. What I'm also interested in for myself and for each of us is that, what does that mean in our day-to-day life when we get stressed out? Where do we go? And Tara Brach, in her beautiful book, True Refuge, speaks about the false refuges of, say, Netflix, although I don't think Netflix was a thing when she wrote the book, or alcohol or drugs or sex or the myriad of ways we can find the short-term fixes, so to speak, that we may know, like, this isn't actually going to help me, but it'll feel good in the moment, and there's some benefit to that. And but also, where are our true refuges, and how do we, on an individual day-to-day basis, it may be availing ourselves of some form or another of the triple jewels, and also where is it actually true? For many of us, as we've shared over the weeks and years, the refuge in nature of being able to take ourselves outside and find a connection to the natural world that is around us. And indeed, in the Buddha's teaching in the Thai forest tradition, of which Spirit Rock is a part, the retreats were in the woods, right? It was all around the monastics, and that these teachings are not separate from the natural world very much. How do we bring in a sense of our connection to the natural world to remind us, oh yeah, right, that's me too. You know, this animal body of ours from Mary Oliver's, what to allow the animal body to love what it loves. The animal body, the degree to our familiarity and exposure to the natural world does impact our comfort, of course. And I will claim this isn't refuge for myself, but being able to find refuge in the natural world, that's what this being is, right? We are made of the same stuff. And how can we allow ourselves to take ourselves out into nature? And in conversations I've had with folks this week about ways in which sometimes the human relationships we have fall short of what we're needing, that we might want to be able to take refuge in our primary relationships, and that's for various reasons that might not always be possible. And being able to understand, okay, all of us as humans have our limits. We can have our expectations and aspirations of what we want other people to be. They may be able to meet it, they may not. And when they may not be able to meet it, there may not be any ill intent. It's just we're limited beings. And how to be able to accept the reality of who we are as humans, who the humans are in our lives, of, oh, right, we're all limited in our capacity, despite our aspirations to be otherwise, or our expectations on another that they will be otherwise, but to be like, okay, given the realities of who and how we are at this moment, where can I continually find a sense of comfort? Yeah. And how can we diversify our sense of what is comforting? I'm going to share this poem. Viewers may think they can process it all, by Stephanie Gray. But viewers may think they can process it all, but they're fooling themselves. If there's a window open, you might have a chance. If you hadn't gone to Holy Name, if the world didn't change, if you only bent the law of physics so much, if the tides weren't so strong on the Hudson, if you didn't have to go, if it wasn't a dream you still believed in, if that different kind of memory didn't take hold, if your muscle memory didn't steady you, if you didn't have orders you couldn't ship, if you didn't see what you saw, if the crawl wasn't always hungry, if there weren't celebrities in every sphere, if you didn't know all the criminals in the neighborhood, if nothing ever happened here, if it wasn't a country club, if there wasn't magic in actuality, if you didn't dislocate the phrase, if you didn't grind the blue sky, if you hadn't been a downward trajectory, or if the shadow didn't undo itself, if you weren't all on break, if everyone didn't shut down, if Canada wasn't in the escape plans, if the future wasn't sparkling with nostalgia, the incredible power of if only. And how many times I've uttered that in my own mind, had those thoughts of if only this hadn't happened, if only this had happened. Okay, is there refuge in that? No. It's just the mind trying to, it can create a story that can be incredibly compelling, which can also come with a degree of shame or blame or this that we've missed out. The teachings of being able to relax back into what is known, what's true, which may have a different flavor. Each one of us may answer that question very differently. What's true? Where can we take refuge? Yeah. You know, one of my favorite books I draw from all the time, the Dalai Lama and Desmond Tutu's Book of Joy and the Eight Pillars of Joy. And the first, he sort of divides it into the four for the heart, for the mind, four for the heart. And the first pillar of the mind and the cultivation, developing our capacity for joy is perspective. How do we shift our perspective? And part of this for me can be unpacking or actually understanding what's an expectation I have of myself, of others, of the world, of my life's path. You know, the subtleties of expectations and being able to be like, oh, that's just a mind, a creation of the mind. It's an idea I have. It's a wanting, it's a longing, it's an expectation, the beautiful link between the seeds of, there are seeds of resentment or live and expectation, that correlation. Being able to shift the perspective of what's actually true. It's a real powerful question to begin to play with. Can we step out of our conditioned belief? This is what I expect of myself, my life, people around me. To be able to shift that perspective of, well, what's here? What's known? Read a little bit from the word Dalai Lama used the terms wider perspective and larger perspective. Actually, I want to go back to this. Joy is a byproduct, the Archbishop began. If you set out and say, I want to be happy, clenching your teeth with determination, that's the quickest way of missing the bus. So if joy and happiness are byproducts, what exactly are they byproducts of? So diving deeper into the qualities of the heart and mind needed to cultivate and catch that bus. A healthy perspective really is the foundation of joy and happiness, because the way we see the world is the way we experience the world. Changing the way we see the world in turn changes the way we feel and the way we act, which changes the world itself. Or as the Buddha said in the Dhammapada, with our minds, we create our own world. I'm going to reread that because I think this ability to first understand, and now speaking from my a recent experience of mine, of having this idea of how I wanted things to be and then being unhappy because they weren't that way. It's like, I made that all up about what I wanted. And there's a way that we want what we want, right? There's that grasping. Okay, so being able to see that, okay, this is what's happening. There's a longing here, there's a grasping. Okay, that's all it is. It's a longing or a grasping, and then there's a story created around it. So by shifting the perspective of, oh, I made that whole thing up, then there's a capacity for freedom. Like then there can be room for another perspective to come in, right? The way we see the world is the way we experience the world. Changing the way we see the world in turn changes the way we feel and the way we act, which changes the world itself. With our minds, we create our own world. And really being able to hold that almost viscerally, because in there lies tremendous freedom. If I move around wanting things to be a certain way and then they're not that way, then I get frustrated, right? That doesn't help me. Yeah. So catching this, oh, this being able to, first of all, and I think most importantly is just catching that awareness. Oh, I'm doing that thing. Okay. And I'm making it up. Right. It's a fabrication of the mind. And then just pausing there for a bit, just be like, that's really interesting. And that it can create suffering because, but it's just a mind creating a problem. And I'm not saying that we will not have, again, the longings and the cravings. Yes, but being able to question what's true and what's possible. Understanding our own limits, understanding the limits of the world around us, right? The idea that there can be kind of in the dominant culture, at least like, well, if you take these steps, you will get X, Y, and Z. And that doesn't really happen. And generally, people come to the Buddhist practice to be like, this isn't really working. That idea didn't actually pan out. So how do we deal with the reality of there's suffering here? Things don't work out necessarily how we want them, if ever, right? Or they might momentarily, and then it shifts. So how can we sort of situate ourselves to be in line with, oh, things don't work out. Like a couple of weeks ago, talking about it's always Mercury retrograde. Things aren't going to work out. And that freedom that can come if we believe that, oh, then things work out. Like, oh. But again, it's working with our expectations. And the shift of perspective, having the larger perspective, the wider perspective, can help kind of rattle or loosen our fixed sense about how things are. I'll go back to what I was originally going to read. The Dalai Lama used the term wider perspective and larger perspective. They involve stepping back within our own mind to look at the bigger picture and to move beyond our limited self-awareness and our limited self-interest. Or I would add our limited sense of, I want this. I don't want this. Yeah. Every situation we confront in life comes from the convergence of many contributing factors. The Dalai Lama said, we must look at any given situation or problem from the front and from the back, from both sides, from top and bottom, from at least six different angles. This allows us to take a more complete and holistic view of reality. And if we do, our response will be more constructive. We suffer from the perspectival, and then you know that was a word, of myopia. As a result, we are left nearsighted, unable to see experiences in the larger way. When we confront a challenge, we often react to the situation with fear and anger. The stress can make it hard for us to step back and see other perspectives, other situations. This is natural, the Archbishop emphasized. But if we try, we can become less fixated, less attached, to use the Buddhist term, to one outcome, and can use more skillful means to handle the situation. I'm sorry, forgive me if we're going to read a little more, but from a wider perspective, we can see our situation and all those involved in a larger context and from a more neutral position. By seeing the many conditions and circumstances that have led to this event, we can recognize our limited perspective is not the truth. As the Dalai Lama said, we can even see our own role in any conflict or understanding. Taking the God's eye perspective, which Desmond Tutu uses that phrase, and really this is a different version in a way of equanimity, the 30,000 foot view, sitting down in the middleness of it all. About how can we loosen our attachment to wanting things to be a certain way or expecting them to be a certain way, and what happens when we can shift the perspective. And it's not about, again, it's not negating our own experience. It's just, oh, there's another way to think about this. And isn't it interesting that if I think this way, I'm going to be suffering? And again, I just find it so remarkable that there's this malleability of the mind, and through our practice and being able, as most weeks will be like, let's check this out. How's the mind? What's happening in the thinking mind? Because in so doing, then there's choice. Oh, my mind's thinking this way. Is this helping me? Or am I just stressing myself out or complaining about something? I'm complaining about something. Can I stop? Maybe not like that, not on a dime, but I can cultivate the awareness of the inclination. And in so doing, I can make a choice to incline the mind otherwise. And the beautiful book and the teachings in the Book of Joy is the teaching of like, hey, why don't we incline the mind over here? The Moment by Margaret Atwood. The moment when, after many years of hard work in a long voyage, you stand in the center of your room, house, half acre, square mile, island, country, knowing at last how you got there and say, I own this, is the same moment when the trees unloose their soft arms from around you and the birds take back their language. The cliffs fissure and collapse. The air moves back from you like a wave and you can't breathe. No, they whisper, you own nothing. You were a visitor time after time, climbing the hill, planting the flag, proclaiming, we never belonged to you. You never found us. It was always the other way around. And I love this because this idea of, oh, I own this, as if we've arrived somewhere. Oh, I got this. No, this idea of we've been found, and it's a shift in perspective. Yeah. Of looking, oh, can I allow myself to be found in the world? As opposed to always looking and claiming and being able to pick to, as a perspective shift, can I allow myself to be found as we are right now, without having things to be so different or otherwise, without the mind expecting things to be a certain way. But this idea, we never belonged to you, you never found us. It was always the other way around, which also suggests we didn't, I'm going to put it in the double negative in purpose, but like we didn't ever not belong. Right? The John O'Donohue line, like we all, our mind, it is our minds that make us so homeless. It is a fabrication of the mind. What if we allowed ourselves to inhabit the reality of, I do belong. I am found. You know, I don't have it in right at my fingertips, but the David Wagner poem, Lost, the trees are not lost. Go and stand among the trees. They will find you. No two trees are the same to Wren or to somebody else. But that idea of allowing ourselves to be found in the world that we are in requires a certain perspective change. Yeah. Can I allow myself to belong? Can I allow myself to be found? I think I got it. Let's shift. Ask you to close your eyes. And just to take a minute, that was a lot of words from me, just to reconnect to your own body, feet on the ground, that the sit bones are resting upon. And I'm going to ask each of us to think of a situation that has maybe a little bit of a charge, not the most complicated thing in your life, but something with a little bit of a charge. Be it something interpersonally with someone else, someone you care about, someone you're living with, or a work situation, or something internally. And to play with the Dalai Lama's invitation, to see it from different perspectives. So again, thinking of a situation that, again, is a little challenging. Capital little L, little C. Right? So not something that's got a lot of charge. And to consider what it would be like to have a different perspective. I'm going to find his words. If we look at any given situation from the front and from the back. And again, I'm going to ask to kind of play with the situation that you have and then imagining it externally to you. So it's sort of out there. Something that you can look at with curiosity in the front, from the back, from the side to side, above and below. How many different perspectives can you take on the situation? And really allowing there to be a drop into a sense of the imaginal and creative. That it's just beyond, if it's interpersonal, it's beyond just taking that other person's perspective. But dropping into as wide and as large a perspective as possible. If you turn it around. And notice what comes up. If there's an aversion or a contraction, oh, this doesn't make any sense. Okay. Just noticing what comes up at the invitation of an invitation to investigate from these different perspectives. Are there different doorways you can walk through to check out this situation, to see it from a different place? And then noticing what happens internally. Again, if there's a sense of aversion or a sense of expansion, of playfulness, negative, positive. Allowing that all of these different responses are part of this conversation of changing perspectives. Yeah. It's loosening the fixed view. It's expanding a sense of, oh, this too, of inclusivity. This 30,000 foot view. just to take a moment or two more here, and then allowing that situation to just to put it down, let it go, bringing the attention back into the body. And then I invite you to open your eyes, come back into our Zoom space together. And then we'd love to open our Zoom room up for your comments or questions to see what came up, perhaps in that exercise, or thoughts you have in relation to refuge and perspective. And look forward to hearing from you. So thank you so much for your kind attention.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.